Many mothers in the Philadelphia area struggle to feed, clothe, and house their children every day. Wayne Hall is Sunday Breakfast Rescue Mission's Women's Transitional Home. The program at Wayne Hall teaches women how to restructure their lives according to the Word of God. With your help, Sunday Breakfast Rescue Mission will keep families together by showing mothers how to have a better life. You can help these struggling mothers by donating to Sunday Breakfast. Sunday Breakfast Rescue Mission gives women a chance to have a better life. Please help Sunday Breakfast Rescue Mission shelter homeless women in Philadelphia today. To make your gift or learn more, visit SundayBreakfast.org or text the word THANKS to 41444. That's text THANKS to 41444. Sunday Breakfast Rescue Mission, a mother's chance for a new future today.
Your furry family members matter too.
Hi, we're Gordon and Sue Kriebel, owners of Perk Valley Pet Eatery, a family-owned business located on Main Street in the Trap Shopping Center. It's a family experience at Perk Valley Pet Eatery, one you won't get at chain and grocery stores. You'll find a distinct difference at Perk Valley Pet Eatery, a difference in quality and in our natural approach to your pet's care. You may not be aware of better options for your pets, so come in and discuss your pet's nutritional needs and health. Our knowledgeable hands-on staff will be happy to help you learn what's best. We've been your leaders in pioneering pet nutrition and part of our community since 2003. Come out and support our local family-owned business. We'd love to meet you and your pets.
This is Carla Dedessi with Your Family Matters here in the Philadelphia area at 1180 WFYL, working for your liberty. Autumn Miles, who is the author of Appointed, which was launched in July 14th, 2014, she shares her personal story of surviving an abusive marriage and encourages women that we all have a unique calling in our lives. And she points us, shows us what God's plan is for us, no matter what is in our past. She is also the CEO and founder of the Blush Network. Autumn, thank you so much for being with us this morning.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Tell me a little bit about your personal story. Did you grow up in a Christian home and a believing faith?
Yes, I did. I grew up in a pastor's home. I had a great parent. I was always at church. And really loved church. Things start happening. We start doubting, at least I did. I started doubting my Christian faith. And when I was in high school, I noticed that there were a lot of guys everywhere. And they liked me, and I really liked that they liked me. So I was going to church all the time, but really excited about all these guys that were showing me all this attention, and sort of began to really live a double life. And, when I was a junior in high school, I met a guy. I was actually dating four guys at the same time, and, met a guy who was just like blew my socks off. He was like the cutest thing I've ever seen. And, he asked me out and, was just a great guy. Initially, I broke up with all four of my other boyfriends to date him. And, we started a dating relationship when I was a junior, but, I grew up really loving church in a great Christian home.
So this is something that we all need to hear, because I think that sometimes we believe that if we take our children to church on Sundays, that it's all going to work out well. And here you are, a pastor's daughter, and you're finding a lot of stimulation and excitement from these boys and all the attention that they're giving to you at the public school. And this is where we go down that path that we shouldn't. That many of us do, and talk to us a little bit about the consequences.
Well, I mean, it was, my parents were incredible parents. I really struggled with living my parents' Christianity and my parents' faith and my faith. I think a lot of our kids these days are looking at their parents and they're saying, you know, they're sort of following in their parents' footsteps, which is exactly what they, I mean, I have two kids myself. So I understand, you know, the kids are watching their parents, what they do. But it's totally different when the child assumes the Lord in their life on their own. And I had made a verbal commitment to Christ when I was 11 and was really passionate about him for a while. But, you know, these boys were sort of this thing that I began to idolize. Rather than worship God, I began to worship these boys, and I sort of fed this desire for these guys rather than my relationship with the Lord. And I think a lot of our kids are doing that these days. I mean, you know, it's definitely a big issue.
Mm-hmm.
But when I was a junior, I started dating this young man, things became sexual very quickly. And, you know, we began down a road that was sinful from the beginning. And I began to notice him, you know, after the sexual relationship started, I began to notice him, you know, saying little things like, you know, you're stupid and you're fat and you're ugly. And, you know, at that time I was tied to him, emotionally, and it was really hard for me to sort of find my way out of the relationship that I was in.
And do you believe that it was difficult for you to find your way out of that relationship? Because when we have sex with someone, we do become emotionally tied to them, and it is more difficult to get out of that relationship.
Absolutely. That's why 1 Thessalonians 4 is in the Bible. For this is the will of God, your sanctification, that you abstain from sexual immorality. You know, God is not mean when he says that. He's actually loving. He's saying, please listen to what I'm saying. I know the consequences. But we sort of bypass that verse or any verse about sexual immorality because our desire is so strong.
Autumn, so can you compare two relationships in your life? And me, I don't know. We're going to get very personal here. Did you have a relationship with a man or a boy that wasn't sexual? You were dating him. You had a relationship with him, but it was not sexual. So compared to the sexual relationship with a man, tell us what the differences were.
I mean, well, yeah, I can compare you to my husband now. We were not intimate before we were married, because at that point, you know, I learned, and I'm sort of bypassing my story, but I can compare the two. He was, my husband now, when I met him, was seeking after the Lord. He was passionate about the Lord. Even though those desires were there, I mean, you know, just keeping it real on your show, those desires were definitely there, but it wasn't as strong as our desire as a couple to do what God wanted us to do. We wanted to obey because we knew, and I had certainly found out from, you know, choosing the wrong path earlier in life, that God, his way will overcome us with good if we stick to it. And at that point, I was not willing to even risk it. Really, being intimate before marriage wasn't even really a huge temptation because I knew the consequences that would come from that sin.
Well, and I would assume because I was like your husband, I was a virgin when I got married and I waited, but there were a lot of, it's not easy, Autumn. It's actually extremely, extremely difficult. It's easy to give in to those primal desires.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to place a lot of gates around myself. And what I mean by that is, you know, and certainly there were times when I was with a really hot looking guy, at least I thought he was, Autumn. and we were alone and it was at 12 or 1 o'clock. And that is not the right thing that you want to do. I have three little girls. I mean, we need to teach our little girls at 10, 12, 14, that God's way is the best and that it is up to the parents to do a lot of prayer over our kids, but also Autumn, I have to protect myself. And that Christian man that I'm with, he needs to protect himself. And, you know, my dad used to always say, Carla, we live in a society where, listen, It's just the way that God created us both differently, Autumn. And I'm sure that you have seen this in your, I'm sure that you've seen it way more than I have. But men, it is really hard for them to control themselves. They have been made differently. They see us and they just want us. They love us. Mm-hmm. Where women, we can put the brakes on and stop that. And not that I am giving all of us, the women, the responsibility, Autumn, but I think that we can kind of... we can put that man at bay a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, I believe that whatever you feed, whether it be the flesh or the spirit, will grow. If you feed into the Spirit of God and in His Word, and you're constantly feeding yourself with just the nutrition of the Lord, that desire will grow. If you feed the flesh in sin and lust, that desire will grow. And we were to a point, I was definitely to a point, because I did suffer huge years of abuse from my first marriage. I was to a point that I had found God in that marriage. I was not going to compromise because I didn't want to be abused again. It wasn't worth the risk. I literally did experience the consequences of sexual intimacy before marriage. And, you know, because of that, I even underwent sexual abuse while I was married. So when I met my husband, yes, it was definitely hard. My husband is very good looking. And, you know, we immediately put up barriers. We were not alone together. And I know, you know, girls, you know, in the culture that we live in, even now, because we've been married almost 11 years, people look at me like I'm crazy. We were not alone together unless we were in a public place. Mm-hmm. That's very difficult to do, but that's how much I did not want the consequences of sin, and that's how much he did too. We constantly protected ourselves when we were out, because you always can go and find some dark place somewhere. You know, we constantly were protecting ourselves. We had people, many people, that spoke into our life on a regular basis, and our engagement was short.
Good. Perfect. Hey, I love it. Now, let me ask you this again, because you have two different perspectives. So, and really, all the research does show that when we are sleeping with somebody, it is harder to break up with that person. When we're just dating going out to dinner, you know, having great conversations, but now we find out, they're a little bit crazy, or they're a little bit controlling. It's so much easier to say, I don't want to date you anymore, because we have not had sex with them. And that's the way that God has designed this. Now, you tell us how fabulous the relationship emotionally, physically, sexually is with your husband as compared to when you were not doing relationship God's way. So God's way versus not God's way.
I would say in my previous marriage, you know, once sex entered the picture, so did jealousy. There was a lot of insecurity on my part, because I felt, you know, here I gave in to this with no commitment. He could leave at any time. And I've given him all that I could give. Anything special, I gave him. So I was, I started sort of looking around, like if he looked at another girl, I would freak out. I would get really nervous. Does he think she's prettier than me? You know,
of course.
There was a lot of, you know, arguments over ridiculous things, that I can look back on and see. It was just, my insecurity. Sex without commitment, is, you know, emotional suicide. I mean, you just cannot sustain anything healthy when there's no commitment. And I don't mean, you know, we're boyfriend, girlfriend. I mean marriage commitment behind it. And when I married my husband, you know, we in our wedding night, we were able to enter that marriage pure before the Lord, which made all the difference. The foundation of my marriage with my husband was built on purity and not sin. It was built on the foundation of holiness and righteousness. We even took communion on our wedding night, and we entered that relationship with trust. And I had the commitment there. I had the man there that said, till death do us part. it wasn't some frivolous thing that I was handing out to everyone. You know, it was just his, and he was just mine. And, you know, we have not committed adultery in our relationship, and it stands that way 11 years later.
Well, I think that Hollywood tells us that monogamy or marriage is based on sex, and the holy word tells us that it is based on purity, and our marriage is based on God. As we're growing closer to God, we're growing closer to each other. So tell us about your book, Appointed, and tell us, like, what in the world? Like, so your first marriage, Autumn, like, what were you thinking? And God found you there. And God finds us in the darkest places. And tell us also, what were your parents doing at this time? I bet they were on their knees praying for you.
Well, I married my first husband a week before I turned 19.
Oh my goodness.
And so I was very, very young. But sex again, I'm so glad you're talking about this in the, because it's so important. I was tied. Even when we got engaged, I could not see my way out of it. I knew that the option was to get out of the relationship because, you know, the emotional and mental abuse had already started. I just couldn't break that tie with him. And so I married him, and I would say about, a month into our marriage, we experienced my first abusive situation where it was physical. When he lost his job, he came in. He said, you know, Autumn, I lost my job. And I just said a few words. I said, what are we going to do? And something about what I said ignited in him, and I call it an animalistic instinct, where he just was immediately angry. And he came at me that day, and, you know, I really don't remember a ton. It was so many years ago. But I do remember laying on the back of our bed with my feet up, like trying to kick him to get him off of me. He had broken, when I sort of snapped back into reality, he had broken our furniture, and, you know, it was just a horrible moment of abuse, you know, that we experienced. And that just got worse during our marriage. And we were married for a total of 3 years. We were together for a total of 7. But I remember that last year that we were married, I didn't tell anyone because I'm a pastor's daughter at a prominent church in our town. I can't shame my parents in saying, look at what I did. And I married this guy, and the whole church came to the wedding, and look what you supported. I couldn't do that. I couldn't bring shame on my family like that. So I internalized it. And I remember a year before God sort of set me free, I was laying in bed. It was 3 a.m. in the morning, and I had internalized all this abuse, and it was overwhelming. It was one of those moments where I could not face another day. At this point, I had nothing to do with God. As a matter of fact, I had believed the lies that God wanted me dead because I was so sinful, and that he hated me. So for a year previous to that moment, I lived my life. I believed that any time God was going to kill me, whether it be a brain aneurysm, whether it be a car accident, I knew that my days were numbered. I had believed that lie from Satan. So here I am dealing with all these thoughts that God hates me, God wants me dead, and then I'm dealing with the abuse from my husband. And I laid at bed at 3 a.m. in the morning, and I said, I cannot do this any longer. And thoughts of suicide began. I had, you can end it right now, real quick. They were very soft. You know, you want one out? This is the way. And I would, you know, try to suppress them. And while I was contemplating killing myself, God spoke to my spirit. That God that I had met so many years earlier in my dad's church spoke to my spirit and said, do you remember me? Very calm, very quiet. And I knew exactly who was speaking to me when that voice sort of appeared in my spirit, and it drew me out of bed. It was very repetitious. Do you remember me? And it drew me out of bed to a room across the hall, and that voice, do you remember me? Do you remember me? And I saw a blue Bible across the way, and I went to pick up this blue Bible, and I'm petrified of the Bible because this represents God who hates me, I'm thinking. And I get this Bible and I put it in front of me because the Holy Spirit, his voice is so much louder than Satan's when we listen to it. I bring this Bible, it's right in front of me, and I'm petrified to open it. So I offer some crazy prayer because I am at my wit's end. It was so rebellious. It was so just angry and ridiculous. I've never prayed this way before since that time, but it was authentic. And I said, God, I do not believe in you. I don't believe you're real. I don't see how you could allow me to go through these years of abuse and not intervene and not stop it. However, if you for some reason are real, you have to speak to me right now, and or basically I'm going to end my life. And I opened up that blue Bible, and, you know, one of those Bible flip opens that we do sometimes. And I pointed down to a verse, and it said, it was from Psalm 91, the righteous will have long life. And only God knew that for the past year, I believed that God wanted me dead. He was going to kill me at any second. And it was in that moment, that one line of truth, I didn't even have to read anymore. God's light shone in to my darkness in the dungeon of my soul. And it shed this enormous light into my soul. And it just corrected all these lies that God wants you dead. God hates you. The righteous will have long life, Autumn. So I fell down that night. It was a moment that this moment talking to you was made from. I fell down and just sobbed and repented and said, God, if you can use someone who at one point did not believe in you at all, believed all these lies that you wanted to get, if you can use me, please use me. And I accepted for the first time in my life that God was working on my behalf. And I laid there probably for, I don't know, maybe an hour, 2 hours, you know, fell down broken and rose a champion for our God. And I made that commitment that night at 3 a.m. I said, God, if you use me, if you use my story, there is nothing I will not do for your name. And so he's built on that. You know, my book Appointed was sort of birthed out of that moment and those experiences.
Let me ask you this question, because that is a beautiful testimony and story, and I believe that God was close to you throughout this whole entire marriage. It was you that was running away from him, and thankfully mm-hmm. you finally turned back, and like you said, you listened and you heard. You have to listen, because he yeah. is always talking to us as believers, but we have to listen, and we must obey, and we must step out in faith sometimes. So what was your husband doing at this point? He's sleeping in bed. He doesn't have a clue mm-hmm. that you're having this. Okay. And
he's sleeping. Yeah.
Okay. And your parents at this time, did they believe that your husband was a Christian or a believer?
He was a professed believer. You know, that's why I got the okay to marry him, because he was a professed believer. Talking to my parents now about that situation, they always knew something wasn't right. But you have to understand an abuser-abusee relationship. I am not going to out him to the world. No way. I am tied. I have allegiance to this person who is abusing me, because if I out him to the world, I will reap consequences from him for doing so. So someone who is a victim of abuse, they are very militant about protecting their abuser. So even though my parents were very close to the situation, they, you know, the Holy Spirit was screaming at them, something's not right, something's different. But every time they would sort of quiz me or ask me questions, I would protect him at all costs. So they did know something was off, something was different, but they could not really come to they had no idea what was going on until I came to them. Really probably 6 months after I had that 3 a.m. in the morning moment and said, listen, this is what's been happening.
Okay. And then at that point, are they counseling? So then what's happening?
At that point, at that point, you know, they sort of listened to what I said. I think they were very taken back by it. They were very angry that this type of thing was happening. At that point, you know, 6 months, I just took 6 months with the Lord. And, I mean, I was in the Bible 3-4 hours a day, worshiping, praying, asking God for strength, trying to rebuild what really had gotten tore down in the last 7 years. So when I went to them, I had the spirit of boldness about me. And, you know, I was ready to tell our church. I was ready to tell the world, listen, this is happening and I need help. But also I need, you know, support. And when I told them, we ended up telling leadership in our church, and they recommended that I did not go to counseling to counseling through them. We actually started going to a counselor that was out of town to try to help us. And we did go through counseling for about, I don't know, for a while. And the counselor ended up releasing us from counseling. And, you know, I would say a month later, things got just as bad and even worse in our relationship. So they took the appropriate steps as soon as I sort of gave up the information. But, you know, we tried everything that we could. And sometimes, you know, when you try, it's really still not enough.
Right. And you feel unsafe in this environment. And that's when the marriage dissolved, I assume.
That's right. We were separated four different times because I thought he was going to hurt me, kill me, something really bad. I went through counseling and really tried. I wanted one day, if divorce was what was going to happen, I wanted one day to be able to stand before people and say, I did everything that I could.
Of course.
Everything. And yes, the marriage dissolved after counseling about 6 months.
Sure. And then when did you meet your handsome husband?
Well, I went, it was crazy. I got divorced in July and felt a very strong call to go straight to college. I was 22 when I got divorced, so I was sort of behind the eight ball. And the Lord said, I want you to go to Liberty University. My parents went there. My brother and sister were attending there. And, I said, okay, I'm going to go. I had no money. I had not even applied for school, and I went in August to Liberty, got a scholarship, and really the Lord really worked all that out. But I met my husband. He was probably one of the, I don't know, first guys that I even met on campus. And he was walking towards me, and I was with my brother because he was already there attending, and nothing crazy happened, but I just noticed him very passionate about the Lord. He wanted to do youth ministry work, and we immediately had a connection because I was very ministry minded myself as we were talking. And I tell everybody this, he had very kind eyes. He's very kind. If you were to meet my husband, he's got a very sweet, kind disposition. And there was something about that, you know, because of what I had been through, that really drew me to him. I thought, man, he is just a kind person. And he still is to this day, but you know, it took a while for him to start pursuing me, especially after I said I had been divorced. But the Lord worked it out—a beautiful love story, a beautiful picture of redemption.
I think that your story and your book Appointed is so important for such a time as this because we're all sinful. We all have a past. We all have a presence and a future, and we're not going to be perfect until God has finished his work within us. However, what you are touching on, Autumn, the sexual sin is really so prevalent today, and I think that there's so many wonderful people out there that did not know that they were doing something wrong when they were sleeping with a boyfriend that they loved. And it's such an encouragement to hear you say that even though we have made mistakes and that we have done things that were wrong, when we get married and do things God's way and we find that there's a better path, which is sexual purity and abstinence, that God makes all things new. Just like, and that, you know, you can have this sexual past, but then God can clean that slate and you get married and you can have a wonderful sexual life and you don't, you, God forgets our past, so we should too. Mm-hmm. Right, Autumn?
Yes, yes. And, you know, the book Appointed, I was really written, I wrote it because so many people, you would not believe how many people I talk to that come up to me after a conference or whatever and say, I can't, I hear your story and I hear what God's done in your life and I understand that you are in sin, but you don't understand me and where I am. And it was written to really speak to those people to say, listen, no, you are put on this planet for this time right now. God did not make a mistake. He was incredibly calculated when he placed you here. And there is a future. Forget what's past. There is a future that is called out to you saying, here, I have something great for you. Will you walk in the way I have for you to achieve your calling? And the last chapter of the book talks about the significance of vision. Because vision is so important. I get frustrated when people say, I'm not a visionary. I'm not, you know, Walt Disney or Steve Jobs. And, you know, I don't believe, I think that's just a lie from Satan. If God tells us we have he has a plan for our life, our job is to seek God and he will reveal his vision, his plan for our lives to us. He will reveal it. And I believe that all these people that sort of come to me and say, you know, this is where I've been. And I just can't believe that God would forgive me and would heal me and would do in my life what he's done in your life. You know, I say, stop thinking that way. Seek him, start walking in his way and understand that what you've been through is an education for what he's calling you to do. He can turn anything into an education for your future. And that's exactly what he's done for me. In hindsight, if I would not change one minute of the abuse, 1 second of, you know, I ended up having my church sort of reject me. I would not change 1 second of that rejection by the church. I would not change 1 second of it except for my sin, because it has educated me on how to deal with the things that I'm dealing with now. That rejection that I faced early in my life helps me deal with rejection that I face now when I am tenaciously following after the Lord to accept all that he has for me. So everything in your past educates, I believe, for your future.
Absolutely. It's a chapter in your book. You can't rip it out. It's a chapter in your book. And also, mm-hmm. we all know the Bible verse in Jeremiah that says, I know the plans that I have for you. They're a hope, to give you a hope and a future. But I love the Bible verse also, Ephesians 3:20, that says that God will do exceedingly and abundantly above all that we ask or think. I love that verse so much, Autumn, because I think to myself, goodness, I want to do X, Y, and Z, but God has plans for me that I can't even imagine. They exceed anything that I have for myself. So we need to wrap up our time, but this has been so awesome, Autumn. And tell us how we can get in touch with you through the Blush Network. Tell us real quick what the Blush Network is and then how we can get your book.
Blush Network, very simply, we are a women's ministry. We do conferences, we do events, I travel and speak, we have an intern leadership program, that our mission statement is to spiritually challenge the way women think. We want to challenge you. We want you to challenge you to change. And, you know, so that's what we sort of do. That's my ministry. You can get a hold of me through autumnmiles.com. I have a Facebook page, Autumn Miles, Twitter, all those social media outlets, theblushnetwork.com as well. But, you know, let me touch on that verse, exceedingly abundantly more than we can ask or imagine. The last part of that verse is according to the power that is at work within us. There is a power when we are Christians that can overcome any turmoil. And that power is at work in the Spirit of God within us that can do the exceedingly abundantly. And I have learned so much to tap into the Holy Spirit in that lies within me to really overcome obstacles that I face.
Autumn Miles, author of Appointed, CEO and founder of the Blush Network. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. It's been so fun.
This is Carla Dedessi with Your Family Matters here at 1180 WFYL, working for your liberty here in the Philadelphia area. We have Guy Delcombre with us. Am I pronouncing your name correctly, Guy?
It's actually Delcombe. It's a little tricky because it's
Delcombre.
A French descent.
You know, I thought it looked French. I'm going to say Delcombe. Okay. Guy Delcombe, he's the author of Earth and Sky. He shares his personal story of losing his wife suddenly and becoming a single father to three little girls. Throughout his book, he shares his personal grief and how he was able to help his daughters cope with their loss. He's also consulted on a lot of children's grief curriculum, and I would encourage all of you to check out his blog. Thank you for joining us today.
Well, thanks for having me so much, and definitely appreciate the time to speak about the book and mostly speak about God's grace in our life.
I'm excited to hear your story. You know, I have three little girls as well, and I can't imagine if I were to lose my husband, Lenny, you know, just the tornado, the hurricane that would really place in a family's life. So can you just share a little bit about what happened with your wife?
Sure. You know, Carla, just hearing you describe it as losing the loss of a spouse as a hurricane or a tornado couldn't be more aptly put. It's just such a disruption, especially when it's unplanned and unexpected. And that's exactly what happened in our situation. We were church planting in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, and about a year and a half in, just suddenly, unexpectedly, my wife had a seizure. And immediately went into cardiac arrest, and we spent 5 days in the ICU of a local hospital. Just me torn between two worlds, what I wanted and what I believed and what God would do. And, as obviously my wife didn't make it, and she died, and that was it was a stark reality because our daughters, they were all under the age of 8 years old at that time, and they had no clue of what was going on with their mom. The conversation after 5 days of the ICU, the conversation that I had with my daughters, seeing them for the first time, was absolutely the most heart-wrenching and terrifying conversation I've ever had to date in life. And just watching the life kind of dim out of their eyes, and them not really fully being able to understand what happened, but just know that their mother's not there anymore, and she won't be there. The time in the hospital was quite a roller coaster for me, just because as I said, I was torn between two spaces, and God began to settle in some resolve that I knew. On day four that I was going to leave that hospital by myself. And I knew that life was becoming very, very different very, very quickly. And from day five on, it's been me and our three daughters. And for 3.5 years, 4 years, we learned how to shuffle along one little step at a time and figure life out. And most importantly, recognize hope and God's goodness in little glimmers each day.
You know, I have to share a very small, it really cannot relate to your event in your life, but, you know, I had a couple of miscarriages when we were trying to get pregnant, and, I would say to God, why are you doing this? You know, why are you punishing me in this way? Like, my husband and I love you so much, and I kind of felt like... And I don't know whether you felt like this, but I kind of felt like I'm doing everything right, which right there is such a vain statement because we're all doing things wrong. I'm doing everything right. I should be rewarded. You know, I should be a mother to these kids. Like you have these women over here who are having 10 kids and, you know, they're not even taking care of them. Why would you take this from me? So did you have those kinds of feelings? Like, here I am with my wife. I have three beautiful kids. Why are you taking her from me?
You know, Carla, it's betrayal was one of the first emotions that I felt, just because, quite similar to what you just expressed. And it is such a vain thought and emotion that kind of surged through my heart, but demanded space there, almost demanded that God answer, you know, and that God come through. Because like I said, at the time we were church planting, you know, and we had spent our whole life together, 10 years, serving in our local church. And, you know, the thought was, Lord, we're doing everything that we know how to do to give our lives to you. And this is what I get, and this is what life ends up being, and this is what our daughters have to be raised in. You know, it did not equate. And, you know, quite honestly, a lot of the book is, centers on that. It's just not a telling. It's not just a telling of my first wife's death. What it is it's an exploring of, you know, how God's grace fills the darkness and the thinnest parts of life. And much like when God spoke and answered Job, we see Job's account and how Job meanders through grief and how Job meanders through betrayal and very similar thoughts, and how at the end God calls account finally and sets things in place and reveals himself and it as who he is. And he says, Job, where were you whenever I set the foundations of the earth in place? And where were you? And the thought began to settle into my heart, and that, you know, God's not just my God. If I limit him to only being my God, then he's going to always be subject to my accountability and to my judgment. He's much bigger than that. He's a sovereign creator of this universe, and I am literally just a blip on the cosmic radar of his good creation. And whenever I looked at it like that, I felt well taken care of in spite of all things. Mm-hmm. And circumstance were diminished, rightly so, in God's presence. And they were just circumstance. Suffering is a part of the human condition. It's part of the human life. All people go through it in some forms or the other. And I was just glad to know that God was going to be there with me through it. And that's what literally began to set in place a good foundation for me and my daughters to move forward.
And did God bring you to the place where you can take a step back and realize that this is not about you, like you said, because we're only a blip on a timeline here, and you think, my goodness, I'm going to miss her. My kids are going to miss her. This is going to be really hard, but I'm really happy that my wife is in heaven for all of eternity and she's not in pain anymore and she's not here on this earth that is just decaying every day.
Yes. And I think that sentiment found me in that first conversation with my daughters, because I sat there on my sister's patio at her house where my daughters had been. And my sister, myself, my mom were just sitting there with the three of them. And they knew at that point, and they were obviously in pieces. And, you know, I had no idea what I was going to say. But the words that found me were, you know, girls, God did not take your mommy from you. God would never want to take your mom from you. That would be the last thing he gave you her. So, but what happened? Her body, she was just way too sick. And what God did, God rescued her from the pain and from the sickness, and he brought her to heaven, and that's where she is, and that's where we'll all be one day, and that's the goodness, the ultimate goodness of God. There's one thing that I didn't want our daughters to grow up with was some sort of anger with God that he would take their mom from them, and that he's some sort of taking God. Rather, you know, I wanted him to be positioned as still a giver and still the, you know, the source and author of goodness. Mm-hmm. And so far it's good. I mean, you know, grief is kind of a lifelong journey and lifelong movement, and our daughters won't have the emotional maturity to kind of process some of this loss probably until they're young adults, where they'll process it on a different level. Mm-hmm. But right here and right now, God's being a great shepherd, and he's leading us in a good way.
Mm-hmm. And I agree that, again, my situation is small scale, humanly speaking, compared to yours. But when I miscarried these two babies, I have to be thankful for the three healthy little girls that God gave to me. And yeah. I, you know, sometimes when I hear another mom that's had a miscarriage, I'll say to her, you know, your baby's having a play date in heaven with my babies, because, you know, I believe that there's life inside of the womb immediately, and that I had to come to the point where I understood that I don't know what God's plan is, but I just have to trust that it is greater and better than mine.
It sure is.
And go ahead.
Oh, you know, I was just going to say, you know, to point to that, we're nearly 5 years removed from that. And, you know, a year ago I remarried, and it's a whole different adventure. You know,
congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. And, you know, it's not the easiest thing, blending a family. My wife now, she was never married before and doesn't have kids. But, you know, always allowing our girls to remember that, you know, she's not replacing their mommy, but she's being a mom to them now. And even in that, Carla, there's goodness, you know, that God would have a plan beyond just the most decimated part of their lives at such a young age, being that how young they were, bringing another woman who loves them and cares for them and loves their story, you know, and wants to support and celebrate their mom and be a strong presence now. That can't be authored by, you know, just happenstance in life.
No.
That's just a good God that has a good plan for our lives, no matter what.
And that's God's providence, because, my goodness, what a blessing that you did not have one godly wife, but two godly wives.
Yes.
And even for your children, not one godly mother, but two godly mothers. What a gift.
Yes, trust me, it is. And, you know, they were at the age, now our oldest is 12, and, I mean, she's definitely at the age to where she needs a woman in our life, you know, who can be a mom, not a grandmother, not an aunt, but someone who can really come and mother her and, you know, help shape her. And, I mean, let's face it, I mean, me and the girls, we had a good run, you know, just the four of us, but I'm, you know, I was a dad and don't have the same emotional, you know, makeup as they do, and it was a learning experience, and it was an adventure, but it was an adventure that brought us ultimately with to where we are now with a new woman in our lives, and that's a good thing.
Let's talk about how you were grieving. In your book on page 33, you say that healing is a process that begins with hurting. If you never fully hurt, you never fully heal.
Yes. In my healing process, I began to look at it in a different way because, you know, let's face it. I mean, we as a church, Big C Church, we don't always do the best job of hurting honestly and being very open with the dark spots, because we don't always, our theology doesn't always leave enough space to resolve the fact that there is suffering that's present in our lives. And, you know, we can get caught in a trap to where we feel like we've done something wrong, or we feel like we've misstepped. And I think for me, healing really began to be a positive movement forward whenever there was admittance that that hurt me really deeply. And that was just, you know, in prayer, speaking to the Lord, that really, really cut me deep. And that really knocked the feet right out from under me. And, you know, it was when I was allowing myself to be the most open and the most vulnerable and the most hurt with God, and then also with those close to me, that I was absolutely ready to heal and began to heal in that place.
I also like that on page 151 in your book, you say, grief and loss imploded the life I knew, but grace and love rebuilt it. Can you speak to that? And also, I have a feeling that probably because of this death from your first wife, I can imagine that God is bringing so many people to you that have had the same situation.
Yeah, it's definitely true.
Miraculously, because like I don't know that many people that have had lost a spouse, but I bet that God is dropping them in your lap.
Yeah, and you know, those are really good conversations to have, and I'm thankful to be able, you know, to be equipped in a way to have those. Not that I have the answers, but
right.
Once you've been through the experience, you know, you do feel equipped in a sort of way that most people don't. And to be able, you know, to be an open ear, or to even be some sort of momentary guide to point them to a resource local to them is a good thing, because, you know, it's really hard to share that kind of vulnerability and that kind of depth of hurt with someone who's never experienced it before, especially within the church. Because, you know, again, we feel like we should be so well put together, and we feel that, you know, we can't show up to a home group or to our church, and when somebody says, hey, how are you doing? I mean, if we answer over and over again, and man, I'm not doing well, and this tracks for longer than like one answer, then something's horribly wrong with my faith, and I need to elevate my faith in some sort of way. When that's just not the case, I mean, people are going to hurt, and people can live with hurt for years, and that's okay. I mean, that's a healing process. And that's a movement where I think God, you know, heals and resets things in our hearts that are very deep. And that's a very holy process that happens.
Tell us a little bit about what you learned about your own children's grief. But also, I know that you have written curriculum. Like, what have you discovered? How best can we deal with children's grief?
Yeah, so, you know, The best thing to be able to offer a kid from my own experience is to have honest dialogue. Whenever you have honest dialogue, it definitely brings you and the child to a similar space, to common space. And I'll give you an example. I know that for the first 6 months after my first wife's death, there were a lot of things that I wasn't being honest with the girls. You know, I was hurrying, honestly. I was hurrying to be okay for them. And I felt like I needed to be strong. I needed to be okay. They couldn't see me weak, because they were weak and they were crying. And what I found out was, I was actually stunting their movement forward into healing. And they would go to my mom or they would go to my sister in conversation, and they would cry out before them and, you know, shed tears for hours sometimes. And I would never see that until my mom brought it to my attention that was happening. Well, finally, our youngest, you know, she was 4 years old at the time. She asked me just a simple question, Dad, do you ever get sad? And it really arrested my heart. Because, you know, I realized that they weren't seeing me hurt, and that was giving them a message that it wasn't okay for them to hurt around me. So whenever we began to have honest dialogue, they began to understand how I was processing through, and that was a very finding thing for them. So honest dialogue is always very good, and then always realizing that a child is a child, that an adult is much different in their emotional complexity. So a child's going to take a while to process some things.
I never thought about the advice that you just gave, because I think that if something tragic happens, you know, I have to be the strong one, just as you're saying. I have to act like everything's normal, everything's still positive, everything's good now, because, you know, I don't want my children to be anxious or depressed or nervous. You know, they're going to reflect my feelings. But when it's grief, it is vital, I'm just realizing from speaking to you, that it's probably very healthy, nurturing, and healing to cry for hours with your three little girls. They want to see you because that's normal, right? That's normal. You should be crying. And they know it.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, in fact, I was leading them to a depressing state by not being honest and not crying in front of them and not sharing vulnerability and not even reminding them that, hey, Dad doesn't know. I don't fully know why these things happen. But I do know, and you can take them, you know, I was able to take them back through little scripture verses, even if they had learned before. You know, I do know that God's a good God, and I do know that he cares for us. And we would read through Psalm 23 together and, you know, talk about the imagery there And that was good. And it was good for them to see me. It was better for them to see me vulnerable and hurt instead of just trying to put on a brave face in front of them.
And maybe because now they can relate to you.
Absolutely. I mean, our conversations aren't so guarded anymore. They're not so they're not so fragmented anymore. They're able to be very honest with both me and my wife now about how they feel, about how, you know, what they're thinking, and about some of the vulnerabilities in life. You know, they still deal with, like, loss. They get anxious whenever they're thinking about loss, and they get anxious right now, even still almost 5 years removed. They still get anxious that they might lose. Like, if I have to travel, they get worried that, you know, what happens? And it's very good for them to be able to express those things. And I think their honesty and expression of their emotions started whenever we found common ground and grieving together openly.
That is so interesting, because it's been 5 years since your first wife's death?
We're coming on 5 years, yes.
Okay. And so I think that those of us who have not had a huge sudden death in our lives, we might think that 5 years you should kind of be getting over it. But really, it's something that you're going to carry with you forever. And it is positive and okay to talk about that loved one that you lost. And in fact, it's probably... it's still part of that whole healing process that you discuss. And when you go out of town for a week, that's so interesting that I could see where your children would be a little bit anxious that, oh my goodness, is he going to come back again? Because their experience is that mom did not come back.
Right. Yes. And celebrating milestones has been a huge thing for us. And we do that. We celebrate their mother's birthday. We celebrate, we obviously talk about the anniversary of her death. And those are two huge milestones. We still celebrate some of the traditions that were a part of their life growing up as little kids. And that's huge. You know, this is their story, Carla. And this is going to be the story. This is a story that God, you know, saw before we can see it and before we began to live it. And, Their story isn't going to be overshadowed and dominated by grief. Rather, grief is going to be part of the bitterness that's in the sweetness of God's goodness. And I don't know what it's going to be for, but I do know that God's going to use it for even greater goodness in their worldview and how they live their lives out for Him.
I agree with you. And so you've shared two things with us regarding children's grief. You said that we must talk about this grief with our children and cry in front of them and cry with them. I love the milestones that you are remembering, the loved one's birthdays, anniversary, and even when they passed away, and traditions. What else can we do with our children?
I know that always talking about the future is a very good thing for us in our context. Now we're talking to children. So whenever I'm saying grieve in front of them, it's always with a good, strong appropriateness. It's always bathed in some sort of hopefulness. In the beginning, when we first started to grieve together, there didn't seem a lot of hope. But, you know, hope began to grow amidst, like, our common grief together. And but I think speaking about the future and constantly reframing or constantly reinforcing God's hope and the hope of a new day in their lives, and that's even as simple as talking about what they're happy about in the year ahead, us starting a new year just a few weeks ago. That's what we did right before the turn of the year. We began to talk about what do we want the new year to look like. This is a new year, second full year as a family as we are now. So what is that going to look like? And then casting even way further, what does your life look like? You know, what do you want to do? You know, outside of just career, what do you expect out of life? And what are some goals that you want to do? Where do you want to travel? Those sorts of things. I think that's probably the third thing that rounds out a good three-legged approach on just how to overall handle a child who is grieving on such a deep level.
Guy, thank you so much for being with us this morning. You are the author of Earth and Sky, Guy Delcom. Am I saying that correctly?
You got it.
Okay. Tell us how we can get in touch with you and get all of this wonderful information.
Absolutely. My website is the easiest way to access my current writings and then also the book and information. Of course, Earth and Sky is on Amazon and major online retailers. My website is just my name, GuyDelcom.com. And that's very easy to just plug in. And that's where all my information's hubbed at online.
Great. And I really encourage all of us to go on. And because, as you said, this is a part of life. We all know someone who's grieving, or perhaps we're grieving ourselves. Guy, just a personal question. So are you a pastor still?
I am not.
Okay.
My life has changed a bit. I'm a full-time writer for a nonprofit. And then I also, it affords me the time to continue to work on my own writing and different works that I'm working on right now.
And probably spend quality and quantity time with your family.
I have the great blessing of working from home. So we both my wife and I work predominantly from home. So we are absolutely able to spend a lot of time and control our family time together.
Well, God bless you.
Thanks so much for having me, Carla.
Many mothers in the Philadelphia area struggle to feed, clothe, and house their children every day. Wayne Hall is Sunday Breakfast Rescue Mission's Women's Transitional Home. The program at Wayne Hall teaches women how to restructure their lives according to the Word of God. With your help, Sunday Breakfast Rescue Mission will keep families together by showing mothers how to have a better life. You can help these struggling mothers by donating to Sunday Breakfast. Sunday Breakfast Rescue Mission gives women a chance to have a better life. Please help Sunday Breakfast Rescue Mission shelter homeless women in Philadelphia today. To make your gift or learn more, visit SundayBreakfast.org or text the word THANKS to 41444. That's text THANKS to 41444. Sunday Breakfast Rescue Mission, a mother's chance for a new future today.
Your furry family members matter, too.
Hi, we're Gordon and Sue Kriebel, owners of Perk Valley Pet Eatery, a family-owned business located on Main Street in the Trap Shopping Center. It's a family experience at Perk Valley Pet Eatery, one you won't get at chain and grocery stores. You'll find a distinct difference at Perk Valley Pet Eatery, a difference in quality and in our natural approach to your pet's care. You may not be aware of better options for your pets, so come in and discuss your pet's nutritional needs and health. Our knowledgeable hands-on staff will be happy to help you learn what's best. We've been your leaders in pioneering pet nutrition and part of our community since 2003. Come out and support our local family-owned business. We'd love to meet you and your pets.